Well, welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd solo here live at the Canucks Alumni Luncheon at the beautiful Hotel Vancouver in downtown Vancouver. They're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the 1994 Stanley Cup Final run. Always a great time to think about that run. I was 8 years old. And as a lot of people have texted in, I'll dive into the inbox to read some memories. But a lot of people who are around my age, that was really the first time you fell in love with hockey, right? The first real emotional experience watching hockey. And I've seen that thought and sentiment echoed a lot in the inbox. I'll get back to that later. But now joining me, the play-by-play voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, he is Brendan Batchelor. And Batch, I'm pretty sure you are not old enough to have memories of the 94 run. Is that correct?
No, I do. I was 5.
All right.
So I was a little younger than you were, but I went to my first Canuck game in person late in that regular season. It was a Sunday afternoon game against the Kings in March, I believe. Okay. So I was already super fired up. I'd been to a game, I was a big Pavel Bure guy, and then
Nice. They
went on that big playoff run. So that really solidified my Canucks fandom at a very early age.
Yeah, I mean, I was very much the same way, right? Like, you know Pavel Bure, and you're excited. And then I was really fortunate. I got to go to Game 6 of the finals against the Rangers, which was absolutely incredible. And, I mean, that's the kind of thing, a core memory for you. Yeah, exactly,
there,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you go, you experience that, and you're like, okay, I'm a hockey fan. This is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a super into the Canucks here for the rest of my life. So that, as you said, very much a core memory for me, and cool to see a lot of the guys from that team here getting back together, reminiscing, and celebrating the 30th anniversary of that run. But lots to talk about with the current-day Canucks. And,
More
challenges, Like, man, just when you think, okay, hey, Besser's coming back, Demko's on the horizon, maybe Miller back in December when they get home. Now the report is that Filip Hronek got injured late in that game, and he's going to be out for a while. We don't have a lot of information, right? Upper body injury, medium to long-term kind of thing here. But, I mean, how do they manage this? Like, what do they do? What are their first options even? On the whiteboard here as they try to figure out what to do without Filip Hronek.
It's funny with all of these things happening. I sort of hearken back to that famous Jim Rutherford quote from the start of last season where he said, if everything goes right, we'll be a playoff team. And a lot of things went right last year. They are not going right this year, whether it's the injuries, whether it's the JT Miller situation, Demko not playing yet, Joshua's cancer diagnosis and his recovery. And now you lose probably one of the top two guys that you could not afford to lose off your roster in Filip Hronek. The other one, of course, would be Quinn Hughes. And it's going to be a challenge for them. And, I heard you talking about it earlier. I kind of agree that it'll be interesting to see if they feel compelled to make a move here because, as much as, they might want to wait and be patient and try and get healthy, who knows when they're going to get healthy at this point because the injuries keep piling up. And, you're one other major injury away from being in real trouble. And you could argue that you're in real trouble right now with Hronek out of the lineup. So it was around this time last year that they went and got Zadorov after Soucy had gone out. And they had struggled a little bit. It wouldn't surprise me if they do that. And they have to sort of bypass the patience that they might have wanted to have because, you can have patience when you're still confident that you'll be a playoff team. And I'm still confident the Canucks will be ultimately, although I guess we'll have to wait and see what the timeline is for Hronek and if they give us any update about that tomorrow before the game. But with the number of top players you have out of your lineup right now, you do risk this season going pear-shaped if you don't do something to try and clean things up or to help out these guys in the short term. In the immediate term, it looks like what they're going to do is call up Mark Friedman and send Arshdeep Bains down per the NHL media site. That's what it's looking like as Friedman has appeared on their roster and Bains has disappeared, which is usually the precursor to those sorts of moves.
Yep.
So it leaves them in a pretty similar cap situation regardless of whether Hronek is able to play or not, assuming they're not going to put him on IR or anything like that. But now you're looking at a right side that is Tyler Myers, Noah Juulsen, Vincent Desharnais, and Mark Friedman. And like, that's simply not good enough if you want to win games consistently. So it's going to be a challenge for them, and I'll be really interested to see how the organization reacts and whether we see them make a move to help shore up things on the blue line in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating position for this front office. And of course, I think, you know, my mind immediately goes to, well, Carson Soucy got injured last year and they went out and they added Nikita Zadorov. And I think the difference is in that situation, right? The start to their year was so incredible, but it also felt a little fragile, right? We didn't know, okay, is the bottom going to fall out here, right? And I think they almost had to make a deal like that just to make sure, just to try to keep the good vibes going, keep the momentum going. This year, everything has, or so many things have gone against them, and yet, you know, by points percentage, they're still third in their division. It's not like they've dug themselves a major hole. And, you know, if you were sitting in the front office, and, you know, this is speculation and kind of reading between the lines of some things that have been reported, but if you were looking at this team already and thinking, okay, I want to see a little bit more, I want to learn a little bit more about what they're about before we go out and trade valuable future assets to improve the present here, you know, I think the one thing you can say about this is, well, we're in a position where I feel like we're going to learn an awful lot about this team over the next, you know, month, 6 weeks, right? Like, the chips are down in a serious way, in a way we haven't really seen this group deal with consistently. I don't think they need to be world beaters over this stretch, but if you're able to just stay comfortably in a playoff position, right, stay top three in the division for the next 6 weeks, like, even that, I think, is sending a pretty powerful message to the management group if they're able to pull off a pretty significant challenge there.
Yeah, although my thinking goes to, what if you're not? Because then, sure, then let's say they go on a bad stretch here, just for sake of argument. Then maybe you're below the playoff bar. Maybe your points percentage comes down. Suddenly you're chasing things. And we know how hard it is to chase things in this league because we saw the Canucks do it from the start of seasons numerous times, you know, prior to last year, really. You know, the 0-7 start from a couple of years ago looms large in the memory in that regard. So, you know, I think they've got a little bit of time here to see how things go, see if they can keep their heads above water. It's not an incredibly intense schedule here over the next little bit, although December's pretty busy. They play pretty much every other day in the month of December, but there are a lot of home games there, so there's not a lot of travel. Like, you know, I agree they have an opportunity to be a little bit patient, but at the same time, part of me says, you know, what are you going to learn about a team where two of the three right shot defensemen that you're going to ice, so ultimately one of those guys will play in a top four spot, even if he doesn't get top 4 minutes, are guys that wouldn't even be in your lineup in an ideal world. You know, like, I guess you can say, okay, how do they survive on those pairings? And, you know, can their top players and the guys that are still on the lineup, especially in the back end or in the lineup on the back end, elevate their game to help you, you know, survive? You know, you can learn about that, but ultimately, I just think they have to do something. I really do think that the risk-reward situation here, the risk is very high, and the potential reward from quote-unquote surviving, say, the next month, if we assume that's how long Hronek's going to be out, like, I don't know, that they, Jim Rutherford has always been someone to jump the market. He's always been someone to be aggressive, and I think this is the time to be aggressive with the number of top players you have out of the lineup. Just, you know, like, on the one side, you're right. You can learn a lot about your team. On the other side of things, it kind of is like throwing a life preserver to a group that is taking on water right now, right? Like, you're saying, we've got your back. We know it's been tough. We appreciate that you guys are still getting results in spite of all the adversity you've faced. Here's something to help you out. Like, I think that's a strong message you can send to your team as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And I guess the other thing is, if we're looking at the Zadorov deal from last year as kind of a template, you know, that wasn't no cost, but what was it, a third and a fourth, I believe, right? So it's not as if they went out and immediately spent a first-round pick or a top prospect, but they were able to find kind of a mid-range solution to, even just as a stopgap while Carson Soucy was out. And I wonder if there's, now obviously Philip Hronek's a more important, more impactful player than Carson Soucy, so it's harder to just kind of, you know, pick up a guy who can step into that role for a couple of mid-round picks. But I wonder if that's part of the thinking in the near term, right? Is, well, let's just do something to help our depth a little bit here, even if it's not kind of the finishing piece that we might acquire closer to the deadline. The other thing, you know, looking at the game from last night a little bit, Batch, and, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of focus on the goaltending and Archer Shelov's, and I don't think we need to pile on too much. You know, like, as I was saying, look, Kevin Lankinen's probably going to finish out this road trip, and then it's going to be Lankinen and Demko for as long as they're both healthy, and Shelov's will be back in the AHL with Abbotsford. But, you know, one of the concerning things for me beyond the goaltending, the defense, was, yeah, they come back and they make it 5-4 ultimately, but that was not an impressive offensive performance from the Canucks. Yeah, they got down, so they were able to mount a push, but you couple that with the extremely anemic offensive performance in Boston the night before, and for as much as we're all focused on, you know, the Myers-Soucy pairing and Archer Shelov's in net and how's Demko going to look, like, I've got some pretty significant offensive questions about this group right now, too.
Yeah, I think that's fair to a certain extent. Especially, you know, you look at missing JT Miller from your lineup. Yep. That's obviously going to impact your offense. And, you know, the Pettersson line, I think, has been pretty good here of late, but it was maybe one of their quieter games. And I'm so torn about this because, you know, to a certain extent, you want to read into it and you want to say, oh, you know, they really need to find a way to produce more and change things offensively. But at the same time, last night in particular is the second half of a back-to-back. And I'm always loath to read too much into those games because, you know, they're not necessarily reflective of the way that your team can play in a normal scenario, especially when the Penguins were coming off an embarrassing loss at the weekend and had, what, 3 days between games to sit and think about it, as opposed to you playing the night before in a hard-fought game where you had to defend a lot. And then, you know, then you got to fly in and play a team that has a lot of motivation, regardless of how good they may or may not be. And I think a sign of, you know, the Penguins and their struggles is the fact that the Canucks were able to battle back and make that a one goal game. But, you know, you look at some of the Canucks' worst performances this year. The Nashville game was the second half of a back to back. The Pittsburgh game was the second half of a back to back. So I'm a little bit cautious to say that this is a trend or that it's, you know, something that I'm incredibly worried about right now, but certainly they need to produce more offense, and a good way to do that is to defend more effectively too. I thought they really struggled in front of their net, the guts of the ice, as Rick Tocchet would say last night. And that brings us back to the Hronek conversation, where you see a guy like Juulsen struggling and chasing out of position and ultimately, you know, being on the ice for a couple of goals against, if I'm not mistaken. That then makes you worry about, okay, is that guy getting elevated to the Hughes pairing? And if they're bringing someone else in that hasn't been an NHL regular, like, you know, that's where my concern lies mostly. You're right, I think, in terms of the goaltending, Lankinen's going to get the lion's share here until Demko's back, and then, you know, the Shelov's conversation isn't a relevant one and until such time that he has to be recalled. But I've got more concerns about the defensive side of the game than the offensive side of the game right now, personally.
Yeah, oh, I think that's fair for sure, right? And I mean, look, the offensive conversation, obviously a huge part of that is the absence of JT Miller. And we'll see when he's back, what he looks like when he's back, all of that. But look, you lose JT Miller out of your lineup, your offensive capabilities are taking a hit. Now, they have gotten Brock Besser back for the last couple of games. And, you know, I wonder, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. I get why they put him in the lineup where they put him, right? Just, hey, he's coming back from an absence. Help him get his legs back. Kiefer Sherwood's playing really well with Pettersson and DeBrusque. But I wonder, at least until Miller is back in the lineup, if they might have to consider, you know what, we're going to load up our top line. We're going to put our two best forwards, Pettersson and Besser, together, and we're going to figure the rest of it out after that.
Yeah, and we did see Besser briefly elevated up the lineup in the third period last night when they were chasing the game. He had at least one shift with Pettersson and Sherwood. I certainly think that there is an opportunity for Besser to play up the lineup. You know, coming off a game like that, where prior to that, we had been talking about how well the Pettersson, Sherwood, DeBrusque line had been playing, and DeBrusque got all the headlines, scored the big goal at Boston to allow them to win. I can understand why Rick Tocchet didn't want to change things, but Pettersson and Besser have chemistry that's built in from the past. They were two-thirds of the lotto line together. The only question about that for me, though, is that Kiefer Sherwood has arguably been one of your best forwards and, you know, is helping to drive play, and it's his spot that Besser would be taking on that line. So, you know, it's an interesting conundrum for Rick Tocchet. I could see it both ways. I could see, you know, Besser's a 40-goal scorer. You want him up the lineup. You want him getting the opportunities to produce and playing with guys that can get him the puck in some of those key areas where he can score from. But at the same time, that likely means demoting Kiefer Sherwood or playing one of Sherwood or Besser on their off wing if you're going to demote DeBrusk instead. So, you know, we'll wait to see. It wouldn't surprise me if there are some new lines going into the game tomorrow against Buffalo. And anytime you're missing one of your top scorers, you kind of have to lean on the other guys that produce to try and make up for that absence. And the good thing for the Canucks is that their offense has been pretty spread out. Like, prior to the game yesterday, I was making the joke that no one's allowed to get their seventh goal of the season until everyone gets six, because there were seven of them that were on six goals, and both Suter and Garland, I believe, yesterday, or Pettersson, excuse me, Suter and Pettersson both jumped to seven yesterday, so they're now tied for the team lead. So that is the encouraging thing from the offensive side of things, is if it takes Besser a little bit to get back up to speed, or he's not playing up the lineup right away and you're without Miller, well, you've got like a good stable of guys that can chip in offensively and have done for the most part this year.
Yeah, so tomorrow it's got to be like Garland, Besser, Sherwood getting up to seven as well, right? So we got to have that clump at the top of the leaderboard for as long as possible for the Canucks. It is pretty remarkable, though, to have that many guys tied for the lead this late into the season for one team. I also wanted to ask you about Nils Höglander, who seems very much like he's found himself in Rick Tockett's doghouse again. And, you know, I remember it was a couple weeks ago, right, where Tockett said, like, hey, Höglander came up to me and said, I'm not playing well. And Tock was like, yeah, I got to get you more time. And it's kind of funny because, like, neither guy has really held up their end of the bargain, right? You know, Tockett has not put him in a better position, but Höglander hasn't played well enough to really earn a better position either. And, you know, I'm starting to get just some kind of some Andre Kuzmenko-ish vibes here, right, where it just seems like the relationship in the situation is not working. Look, I'm not saying they're going to flip him this year like they ultimately did for Andre Kuzmenko, but, you know, one thing we have seen from Tocchet is, like, once he loses confidence and trust in a forward like this, it can be really, really hard for that player to earn it back.
Yeah, it's three straight games now where Höglander's played under 10 minutes, which is concerning because, you know, you look at his average ice time in years past, and it's always been north of 12 over the course of a season. And on average this year, he is still north of 12 minutes per game. But, you know, you start to see those numbers, like, generally speaking, if you see a forward's ice time dip below 10 minutes, the next thing that comes after that is a healthy scratch or being sent down to the AHL, depending on your situation. And because of the Canucks' injury issues, Höglander hasn't been a healthy scratch yet, and I would imagine that with Baines going down, that will remain the case because they only have 12 healthy forwards on the roster if Baines is going to go down, if I'm not mistaken. So he's going to continue to play, but, you know, if I'm Nils Höglander and I see those ice time minutes and I realize, you know, how many shifts I'm taking per game and how little I'm getting out there, I have to be awfully concerned about, you know, my job security going forward, whether that is staying with the Canucks organization or whether it's just staying in the lineup on a night-to-night basis if the forward group can ever get healthy. So, you know, hopefully this lights a fire under him to step his game up and play at a higher level. But there's clearly some trust there. And the question with Höglander has always been around his two-way game, right? Like, we see how effective he is on the forecheck, and he can win puck battles, and he can create a little bit in the offensive zone, but what does it look like at the other end of the ice? What does it look like in terms of hitting those landmarks that Tockett always talks about? That's where I would imagine some of the issues are occurring right now, and if it continues to trend this way for Nils Höglander, then it's not going to end up in a good situation for him, and that's a tough thing for the team as well, because this is a guy that scored 24 goals last year, is capable of producing offense, is capable of being a greater factor. At the moment, he's been bumped down the lineup, I think in part because of some of the winger depth and the guys they brought in, But ultimately, when you brought those guys in the offseason, you were looking for healthy competition. You were looking for, you know, guys to elevate their game and earn their spot in the lineup. And there are certain guys like Keeper Sherwood, for example, who has absolutely done that. I think it's fair to say Nils Höglander hasn't. And so for the moment, I expect him to still be in the lineup, but it wouldn't surprise me if they get Miller back when they come back off the trip or, you know, at some point in the near future, if Höglander's spot in the lineup remains in danger, especially if a guy like Max Sasson, who has come up and already sort of impressed the coach and played a couple of good games, continues to trend in that right direction and gives them the kind of two-way game they're looking for in a fourth-line depth role. You know, that's another thing about this, too, is it's almost about the role that you play with the spot in the lineup. And if Höglander can't earn top six or even top 9 minutes at this point, then it's about adapting your game to be an effective fourth-line player. And if guys like Baines or Sasson coming up from the AHL are doing a better job of that than you, then you could find yourself in the press box really quickly, in spite of the offensive upside that you bring.
Hey, Batch, completely unrelated. Are you going to Survivor Series this weekend?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go. What, like, I'm not up to date. You got like a prediction, a match you're most excited for? What are you looking for at Survivor Series?
I think The Rock will make an appearance.
Really?
He's not on the card right now, but based on some of the stuff that they've been doing, it wouldn't surprise me if we get a surprise appearance from The Rock on Saturday night at Rogers Arena. So that would be pretty cool.
That's the first I've heard of that. I am very excited. What a like stretch here for Vancouver, man. The Rock, Survivor Series, Taylor Swift next weekend. Incredible stuff. Well, enjoy Survivor Series, Batch, man. It should be fun. And thanks for doing this as always, buddy.
I will enjoy Survivor Series. I will not enjoy the traffic getting down to the rink for two Canucks
for
games
Swift
on the same day as Taylor Swift concerts. That's gonna
it's
going
to be wild. I'm glad I don't have to get down to the rink. That is going to be absolutely wild on those days, man.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Talk soon.
Talk soon. Have a good one.
Yeah, that is Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. And, I mean, Vancouver traffic, a nightmare at the best of times. Then you throw the biggest concert event we've seen in, I don't know, decades, plus a couple of Canucks games. That's going to be fun. That is going to be super fun for everyone to navigate next weekend when Taylor Swift is in town. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm live at the Canucks Alumni Luncheon here at the beautiful Hotel Vancouver. And as I've mentioned, they are celebrating the 30th anniversary of the 1994 Stanley Cup Final run. So send in your memories. I shared just a little bit with Batch. I can share some other ones on the other side. I can dive into the inbox as well for some of yours. But man, as Batch and I were saying, just I know for people of our generation, of our age group, such an important moment for really building that emotional connection with the Canucks, for establishing that hockey fandom, that sense of what it meant, what it could look like to be a fan of a hockey team. So 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll get into that. I can talk a little bit more about what I want to see from this team, trade options, now that Philip Hronek is out, all of that, the big news in Canuck world today. That a whole lot more coming up next here on Canucks Talk. Sportsnet 650. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. All by my lonesome here on the airways. Lena's here. Not on air. She's keeping me company, getting me water, shooting the breeze with me.
Just being a chill guy.
Just being a chill guy. Dressed in black pants and gray sweater, which is the official Sportsnet 650 outfit for this event. Myself, Lena, Canberra, all wearing identical black pants. Gray sweater. That's what we wear to events like this, apparently. 650-650, that's the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send in your thoughts. We'll play at some point in this segment a little bit of an update from Rick Dhaliwal, of course, our pal from Donnie and Dolly. And by the way, Don Taylor took the day off from his own show. He's here at this event to be a part of this event. It's just like, yeah, you know what? Don't feel like doing my show today. So Don Taylor, shout out to him. What a legend. That's the kind of thing you can get away with if you're a Hall of Famer. But anyways, we'll play a little bit of an update at some point from Rick Dhaliwal on the status of things with Nils Höglander, right? Because, you know, this is going from a minor issue to a pretty significant headache. And we'll get a little bit more into this, but basically, man, you would love to be able to rely on Höglander in a much more significant role while your team is dealing with these absences. You would love for him to be the kind of player that you can ask to step up and play a bigger role. And right now, Rick Tocchet does not see Nils Höglander as that type of player. As I mentioned, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, so you can send your thoughts, your questions in, your trade ideas, your trade speculation, whatever it is, whatever you want to chat about today. But as I've mentioned a couple times, we're down here at the Hotel Vancouver in Vancouver for the Canucks Alumni Luncheon, where they're celebrating the 1994 Stanley Cup run by that team, by the Canucks. It ultimately, of course, ends in Game 7 unsuccessfully against the New York Rangers. And send in your memories. What stands out to you when you think back 30 years ago now, a little bit more than 30 years ago, 30 years and a few months, to that run by the Canucks? And I'll start, and I talked about it just a little bit briefly with Batch on the line, but and I think I've mentioned this on the show before at different points as well, but as I said, you know, I was very, very fortunate to go to not the final game of the series, but the final game in Vancouver, Game 6 at the Pacific Coliseum, which the Canucks won 4-1, of course, to force Game 7 against the Rangers. And as Batch said, you know, very much a core memory. And the thing that always sticks out to me when I think back at that one, I mean, first of all, what a just an incredible atmosphere, an amazing experience it was to be able to go with my dad to see that game, to see that win, the emotion in the building, all of it. The specific sequence that always stands out to me is, so it's 3-1 late in the third, and Jeff Courtnell appears to score his second goal of the game, make it 4-1 late, boom, you put it on ice, the game is over, everyone's going wild. You know they're going to win, they're sending the series back to New York for Game 7. Except that, play continues, right? Everyone thinks the puck goes in, but play continues, and eventually, the Rangers score. And so all of a sudden, up on the scoreboard, it's 3-2 with a minute left, and instead of the game being put away, being put to bed, you're thinking, what's going on here? This is devastating. Are they going to lose? Is this going to go to overtime? And people will probably remember this, but I think that was maybe even the first instance of video review in the NHL, or at least the really first significant moment, and they told us they were reviewing it, and they had this graphic that they put up on the big screen to let us know they were reviewing it, and just the moment when they decided that Courtnell's goal counted, and wiped the Rangers' goal off the board, and the scoreboard went from 3-2 to 4-1, and the eruption in the building. Man, I was 8 years old, and that was like the coolest thing I'd ever seen. To simultaneously score a goal and take one away from the other team. I thought that was the best thing. I couldn't even believe it. It was absolutely incredible, and to know that that was what was going to send the Canucks to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final was absolutely incredible. And just really, as Batch said, a core memory. A core memory for me. And again, just a big part of why I became a lifelong hockey fan, why I have this job, why I'm here talking to you right now, was getting to experience that at a young age as the Canucks made that run to the 94 Stanley Cup Final. Lots of texts coming in about what you guys remember and always enjoy hearing these stories, so hit me up here. Sean texts in, 94 Cup run memory, it's got to be the Bure OT goal. No, wait, the Bure elbow. You know what, just Bure in general. And I mean, yeah, Pavel Bure obviously already a phenom, a superstar, and that run and his performance, and especially, look, I know he was great just in general, obviously. But, I mean, especially that overtime goal in the Calgary series. That's another just instant fan-making moment, unforgettable moment. You know, I remember where I was. I remember the reaction of the family members I was watching it with. It was that kind of goal. And I mean, that was the peak of the Pavel Bure experience, and he was phenomenal in his career and his time in Vancouver for the most part, but that 94 run, really the peak of that experience. John from West Kelowna says, I was in grade 6 for the 94 run. It was where I really started being a true fan, if you can call it that. To me, that was the most electric full Canucks team I've ever seen. They truly had everything. They were fast, really tough, big, had guts, played with heart, had good offense, good defense, good goaltending. Humble players, so many huge character guys on that roster and coaching staff. I don't think it's possible to ever put together a team like that again. Sadly, he also says, gives a shout out to Pat Quinn, wishes that they had been able to see Trevor Linden hoist the cup rather than, quote, you know who. Yeah, I think that's a pretty popular sentiment around these parts. Unsigned Text says, I am 39 years old now, and that 94 run was my first real emotional investment in the Canucks. I remember the gutsy efforts and staying up late to watch the games with my dad. And yeah, you know, a couple of people have referenced the gutsiness of that run. And of course, they were significant underdogs coming in to that series. Well, and really in that run, right? They were the seventh seed that year. Now, maybe you could look and say that was a little unfortunate. They were better than that indicated going into that. But still, that underdog aspect of it, right? And, you know, I don't want to turn this into an impromptu 2011 versus 1994 debate, but that's always one of the distinguishing features between the two runs, right? In 2011, they were the President's Trophy winners. They were expected to go deep. They were expected to maybe win the Stanley Cup or at least come awfully close to doing it. They were the favorites against the Bruins. You know, in 94, they're going up against the President's Trophy winners, right? They're going up against the overwhelming favorites, the star-studded, the loaded New York Rangers. And that perseverance, that gutsiness that a lot of people have referenced is something that's going to really, really stick out to people and something that they really remember from that run. Greg texts in, 1994, the Canucks playoff is when I became a Canucks fan. I remember watching it with my dad. It's another thing you hear a lot, right? That family connection that you build watching those games over and over with your fans. He says, with your family, that's why I'm a Canucks fan, and that's why my boys are going to be fans. Chris, who says he's thankful for 94 from Nanaimo, says, I wanted to be Trevor Linden. He remembers the he'll play on crutches call, of course, from the great Jim Robson. So iconic. I always made sure I got to wear 16, sometimes taping a 1 to a 6 on my jersey to make it happen. That's amazing. He says, my love for hockey really grew that spring. Some awesome thoughts and memories coming in. This one, Jamie in Richmond texts in, 3 things from the 94 Cup run that stand out. The Kirk McLean pad stacking save against Calgary in round 1. Jim Robson's call on Greg Adams' winner to oust the Leafs in the semifinal. And the Nathan Lafayette crossbar in game 7 versus the Rangers. Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one that sticks with a lot of people as well. But the Kirk McLean save, for me, the 3 moments really are the Kirk McLean save, the Bure goal, the Greg Adams goal. Right, and as he mentioned, and I guess you could throw in the iconic he'll play on crutches call as well from Jim Robson, but, you know, the Jim Robson call and the Greg Adams goal, phenomenal stuff as well. So those are the 3 that stand out to me when I think back, for sure. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can keep your thoughts coming in. And as I mentioned, in addition to the Philip Hronek situation, one of the things percolating with the Canucks right now is Nils Höglander. And he signs this 3-year, $3 million AAV extension during training camp. It looks great. Everything's positive. Everything's rosy. He starts the season scoring goals. He's playing with Connor Garland. They're playing well together. And then it's all falling apart. And bad defensive effort, maybe really just 1 game, 2 against Carolina, sends him down the lineup, and he has not been able to reestablish that trust with Rick Tocchet. And of course, this is, you know, it's not just us talking about it, right? It's the coaching staff, it's the front office, it's the agent. And man, you know, when agents are involved, you know who we go to for the latest information. It's Rick Dhaliwal, of course, our pal from Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV. And he was chatting about the latest surrounding Nils Höglander, Nils Höglander's agent, the Vancouver Canucks, earlier today. Here is Rick Dhaliwal.
Okay, so I got a little bit of an update on Höglander this morning. He's obviously in Rick Tocchet's doghouse. This is almost like, Ryan, Kuzmenko-like with what's happening. I was told this morning that all parties, including Höglander's agent, Alain Waugh, are trying to get things back on track for Höglander. All parties want the same thing. They want for Höglander to play well and get his confidence back. There has not been a trade request made by the agent, but he has picked up the phone and he has called the Canucks. There is concern from the agent side. You do hear his name pop up in trade rumors, Ryan. Canucks are making calls on the market right now. You do hear teams want Hoglander. It does not sound like the Canucks want to move him right now if they're working with the agent to fix this.
That is Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly earlier today. In the end there, he says, it doesn't sound like the Canucks want to move Hoglander right now. They're working with the agent to fix this. And that's fair. And, of course, Nils Hoglander's name has been very, very popular coming up as a potential trade asset, a trade chip, right? A young forward who has shown some offensive capability, scored 24 goals last year, has some cost certainty attached to him now, although, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of people look at that and say, like, ah, yikes, that's a tough contract for a guy who's struggling. With the end of the flat cap era and the potential significant increases in the salary cap that we could see over the next little bit here, I do think that there'll be a lot of teams who would look at that contract and say, we're willing to bet on that, that if we put him in a better situation, that deal ends up looking like a steal for us over the next couple of years. So I don't think the contract is necessarily a significant barrier to moving Nils Hoglander, especially because teams don't have to fit it into their cap this year, right? He's still on his old deal this year. So the mechanics of an in-season trade would actually be pretty simple. And, you know, I know Thomas Drantz is, I don't know why I'm saying his full name, Drantzer, the co-host of the show that I do, who I talk to incessantly. Drantz. Thomas Drantz. That was weird. Anyways, Drantz has reported that there are teams around the league, a lot of teams, that really value Nils Hoglander, that are very intrigued by him. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to all of a sudden value him the way they would, you know, a no doubt about it, recent first-round pick, grade-A type of prospect, right? That doesn't mean he's going to be the centerpiece of a Rasmus Anderson deal or anything like that, but he does have some value. And as you heard from Rick Dhaliwal, yes, his name comes up. The Canucks don't want to trade him. There hasn't been a trade request, but they're talking to the agent. Doesn't that all, like I said this to Batch, doesn't that all sound awfully similar to some of the things we heard about Andrei Kuzmenko around this time last year? Now, different situations, right? They gave Hoglander a lot more term than they gave Andrei Kuzmenko on his extension. Hoglander's a lot younger. He has had success, at least offensively, under Tocchet already last year. There's a lot of different circumstances, but again, just that, well, you know, hey, we're working at it. We really want to try to fix the situation. It almost feels like once it gets to that point where we're hearing those reports, that's a sign that the relationship's in a pretty tough place and maybe not in a salvageable place. I don't know. We'll see. I like Hoglander a lot as a player. I think he can still play a role for this team. I think they have some time. That's maybe the key difference here between the Andrei Kuzmenko and the Nils Hoglander situation, right? Andrei Kuzmenko was making over $5 million for a team that wanted to go on a deep playoff run. And you just couldn't have a situation where he was taking up that much cap space and either not playing or playing on your fourth line and playing 8 minutes. It was just going to make it so hard to do anything at the deadline. They needed to send that money out. With Hoglander, you know, he's still only making, what, a hair above $1 million here. Well, you can play that on your fourth line. You can play that on your fourth line, get to the summer, maybe his performance turns around at some point, and you go into next year and you reset. You wipe the slate clean and you hope he can take it from there, right? Once he's on that new contract. So you do have a little bit of time. There's not the same pressure to make a move just in order to improve the team like there was with Andrei Kuzmenko last year. Having said that, if you are interested in doing something to shore up your team in the short term here with Filip Hronek out and you don't want to trade Tom Vilander or Jonathan Lekkerimäki, and I think they would have to be a very, very enticing deal, probably for a younger player with term, for them to consider moving one of those guys, given how excited they are about both of them. If you don't want to move one of those guys, well, Nils Hoglander might be your best bet. So as much as there's no pressure and they're working at it, there's also a lot of factors here that could ultimately point to, you know, Nils Hoglander, the best way he could help this team is as a trade chip, to bring in help somewhere else. Batch made the good point as well. Look, Max Sasson's already come up, and the coaches liked him. That doesn't mean he's going to replace what Hoglander could do last year when he was scoring 24 goals, but they have this group of young players. Don't forget, Jonathan Lekkerimäki. I wouldn't write him off potentially coming up at some point this year and helping the team after he got that little cameo that first taste of NHL action earlier this year. So they do have other options. They also have other needs. And, you know, I just thought it was interesting. The report from Dhaliwal that they're working with the agent, that, you know, nobody's made a trade request, nobody's trying to move on here, but it's a situation. It's a situation. There's conversations happening, and as we saw with Andre Kuzmenko, sometimes that ultimately leads to a trade. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and this is a good point from Mike in East Van, who says the same thing happened with Besser and Garland, and that's true. That's a very, very good counterpoint. Right now, the difference there was those were always more about salary cap realities, right? The flat cap and the contracts they were making, the money they were making and all of that, more than Rick Tocchet losing trust in the player, right? Like, we've seen how much Rick Tocchet values Connor Garland. Brock Besser, even when he wasn't a 40-goal scorer, and you could say that he was struggling, he never got significantly bumped down the lineup in the way that Nils Höglander is, right? You could always see that he was one of the key wingers on the team, even when Andre Kuzmenko was, you know, the shiny new thing in town coming over from Russia for his first season. So, yes, you're right that there were, you know, hey, is the agents involved in potentially looking for new homes for both those players? Did Connor Garland even make a trade request? Something like that. It wasn't about their performance on the ice as much as it was about their salary. And in Kuzmenko and Höglander's case, it's not like Kuzmenko had the double. It was salary and it was his play. Höglander at least doesn't have the salary concern yet, but it's more about the fact that he has not been able to earn Rick Tocchet's trust on a consistent basis. But that is a good point from Mike and East Van, that at least as the front office is concerned, yeah, they changed where they were headed on Besser. They changed where they are headed on Connor Garland. We'll see if Höglander can rebuild that trust. And again, I don't think it's the front office that's disappointed with Nils Höglander. I mean, I'm sure they would love him to be playing better. But I think there's a reason they gave him that extension in training camp. There's a reason, as Drance has reported on this show repeatedly, that they were not willing to include him in trade talks at the deadline last year. They're obviously very high on Höglander. It's just a question of, can he do enough to stay in Rick Tocchet's good graces? Somebody texted in, J-Rock in the Okanagan, do you not have to trade Hogs to get some kind of D-man? Well, it really depends what you're looking for. And I've been of the mind, even before, you know, this season started to go all kinds of haywire on the Canucks, right? Go back to training camp. Go back to even August, right? When we knew what the team would look like and we knew what their expectations were coming into the year. I've always been of the opinion that they need to go out and add a no doubt about it top four, ideally like a number three, maybe even a number two if he's out there to land it. They need to add that type of defenseman to this team to be legit Stanley Cup contenders. And that hasn't changed. I don't think that you lose Filip Hronek and you feel a need to go out and make that type of move right away, to make that type of move in the short term, right? Because, again, if we use the Carson Soucy injury and the Zadorov trade as a template, you know, Zadorov was not their big pre-trade deadline splash. That was Elias Lindholm. Zadorov was, well, hey, here's a player we like and who fills a need for us right now and who's relatively affordable at the moment, a third and a fourth round pick. So there you go. I think we're much more likely to see something like that as an immediate reaction to Filip Hronek than, okay, now we have to jump the mark and we have to go out and add a top four. Because if you're talking about that, I mean, yeah, Höglander might be part of it, but again, you're probably looking at, you know, first-round pick, and depending on the quality of the player, maybe Lekkomäki or Vilander as well. And I think that's a no-go right now, and that probably is a no-go. Unless, one, this team really convinces management that they are Stanley Cup contenders, bona fide Stanley Cup contenders this season, and two, if whatever player we're talking about has some term attached to it. I don't see either of those guys being involved in a rental. So I think you can address the blue line in Filip Hronek's absence here in the short term without having to move Nils Höglander. Now, the cap machinations and all that, we'll see. But I think you can do it. I think it really becomes a question closer to the trade deadline when you are maybe doing some more big game hunting, if this team has put themselves in a position to earn it, to demand that you do big game hunting, that's when the, okay, well, do you have to trade Nils Höglander conversation really kicks in to high gear. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and you can You can text in your thoughts, and somebody says, well, how can we say it was about Garland's salary when he's been making the same money the whole time? Talkett always liked him, but definitely did not always trust him. Well, it was about his salary because they were in a really bad salary crunch at that moment, right? Like they that was still when, you remember, taking over after Jim Benning. I mean, I don't think we need to completely list the salary cap problems and situation that this new Canucks management group was dealing with. And I think there was a couple things going on with Connor Garland. One, they probably don't look at him as the archetype of a winger that they've had success with in the past, right? You think about the speed that Jim Rutherford values. And two, they thought he was overpaid for the role he was playing. Rick Tocchet, as the texter says, well, he always liked him, but he definitely did not always trust him. Well, maybe not as much as he trusts him now, but it was never a situation where he was in the doghouse. That was never happening with Connor Garland. It was strictly a case of, we're not crazy about this player type, and he's making a lot of money for what he's giving us. The salary cap goes up. You solve some of the other problems other ways. You're not even an LTI anymore. He gets really productive and finds that chemistry with Dakota Joshua. He gains even more trust from Rick Tocchet. And, yeah, he's making the same salary, but now all of a sudden it's not a concern. And it's the same thing with Brock Besser. I don't think it was that they didn't like Brock Besser. They thought he couldn't help them. But, again, not the fastest player. That's typically been something they've looked for on the wings. And he was making a lot of money, and they weren't sure if in that flat cap environment where they were already dealing with a lot of salary cap liabilities, they weren't sure if they could afford to keep Brock Besser in that situation. Boom, he scores 40 goals. All of a sudden, the conversation is completely different. Curtis in T-Town says to the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, this team cannot afford to move more assets for short-term help. Go big or go home. Does Hoglander and a first get you Byram? He's a guy you could build around long-term. No more short-term guys. That's an interesting question, right? I mean, I don't know that Hoglander and a first gets you in the conversation with Bo and Byram. I don't know if Bo and Byram's the answer either. I mean, I loved him in his draft year with the Giants. It's obviously been a bit of a tough go so far in his NHL career for Bo and Byram. But even beyond the specifics of the player, okay, they gave up a third and a fourth round pick for Nikita Zadorov last year. Do people look back at that because he walked in free agency and say that was a mistake? That was a waste? I don't think so. He was a big part of an exciting playoff experience for the team. Yeah, I know it was only the second round, but I wouldn't say that was a waste at all for the team to go out and acquire Nikita Zadorov. And if there's a similar player available, I don't mean similar in terms of the style, but just similar in terms of fit, helping you bridge the gap until you get a defenseman back, helping you survive in the standings and solidify your playoff chances this year. Again, it really depends on what you think the ultimate ceiling of this team is. Because I have no problem giving up, another fourth round and a fifth round pick or something like that to bring in some short-term help. We've seen how effective it can be with Nikita Zadorov. The bigger conversation is, if you're giving up your first, if you're giving up Lekkomäki or Villander or even your next tier of prospects, how certain do you have to be that this team is a Stanley Cup contender, and how much control do you have to have on that player going forward? That's the bigger conversation with me. I have no issues whatsoever with short-term, tweener, puck-moving guy X coming in to play with Quinn Hughes and, help you survive a little bit here in Philip Pronick's absence. Like, that's what mid-round picks are for. Frankly, that's what mid-round picks are for, is to make deals like that. All right, we got the final segment coming up here on Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. We are live at the Canucks Alumni Luncheon celebrating the 30th anniversary of the 1994 Stanley Cup run. We'll see if we have some time for some more favorite memories from the Stanley Cup run. We'll talk a little bit more about the Canucks and what they do in Philip Pronick's absence. Look ahead to the rest of this road trip. Final segment coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, all alone today on American Thanksgiving. Trancer happily sitting somewhere with approximately three dozen parlays going on American Thanksgiving
happily?
Football. Well, that's a good question. It's hard to tell with him sometimes. Sometimes I think that, like, extremely frustrated and irritated is his happy state. You know what I mean? Like, that's actually what he likes. So I hope whatever it is he likes, he's experiencing it today on his day off for American Thanksgiving. Live from the Kintec studio, although, of course, on location here at the Hotel Vancouver for the Canucks Alumni Luncheon. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And shout out to you guys for bringing the heat in the Dunbar Lumber text line today. Of course, lots to talk about, lots to get into between the loss last night against the Penguins, the ongoing questions about the blue line, this team's performance, and also then the Filip Hronek injury news. Lots to get into. I wanted to read this text from Jason in North Van, and I made the reference earlier in the show to, you know, Quinn Hughes as Batman losing his Robin in Filip Hronek, and what will that do to his performance? And Jason makes an excellent point here. Batman had multiple Robins. When one would die, he just found another orphan. Canucks can do the same. And I've never thought about it in quite those terms, Jason, but you do have a point. There were multiple guys who were Robins for Batman. So, look, maybe the Canucks can just go find another orphan, as Jason in North Van puts it, to pair with Quinn Hughes in Filip Hronek's absence. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Not that, Jake and Abby text in. Is this not the most Canucks thing ever? Have a fantastic season, giving the fan base some legitimate hope for the first time in over a decade, just to be completely wiped out with a multitude of injuries and poor performance. And, you know, look, I understand the sentiment there, right? And in some ways, it's hard not to look at this season as the perfect inverse of last year, right? Last year was the dream season, right from opening night. The vibes were sparkling, immaculate, the most fun people have had watching this team for a full season and into the playoffs for an awfully long time, really since probably 2010, 2011. Because even the next year, you know, not the same. They lose in the first round. So it was huge. It was magnificent to witness. It was a lot of fun to cover as well. So it's hard not to, with that so recently in your mind, look at everything that has gone wrong and been a struggle for this team so far. I don't know if you need me to read down the list, but we know about it, right? It's Demko, it's Miller, it's poor performance from Pettersson, now Hronek's out, Besser's been out, Dakota Joshua missing time, all of these things. Archer Seelov's really struggling after his performance in the Stanley Cup Finals last year. There is so much that has gone against this team. I understand where the doom and gloom and the sense of pessimism is coming from. I think it's a very Canucks fan reaction to look at this and say, this is like karmic payback for all the fun we had last year. This is the universe balancing the scales after they got wildly tilted last year with all of the good fortune and the fun that the Canucks had. I get it, but let's pump the brakes here a little bit. This season is not over. And if you came into this season with the expectations that the Canucks can be Stanley Cup contenders, you should absolutely still have that same belief. Now, look, obviously a lot of bad things have happened, and there's going to be a lot of challenges for them to overcome. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying there's no cause for concern. But I'll just paint the positive case here going forward, right? Brock Besser's back in the lineup, okay? Thatcher Demko, in all likelihood, going to be back sometime within the next week to 10 days. Now, we don't know what he's going to look like. I think it's totally reasonable to be concerned about his performance, his durability, how much of a workload can he handle? Are they going to be able to get him to a spot come playoff time where he can play every second night at a really high level for this team? That's a fair question to have. But we also don't know that the answer is no. We have no idea. It's a complete unknown. And yeah, there's a lot of risk associated with that. But guess what? There's upside with that as well. Don't forget, Thatcher Demko is absolutely extraordinary. So is it possible he struggles? Yes. Yeah, of course it is. But it's also possible that he comes back and, you know, by February, we're talking about, wow, this is vintage Thatcher Demko we're seeing. Same thing with JT Miller. I'm not going to... We have been very good about not speculating, right? We have no idea what's going on there. He deserves his privacy, but he's going to be back with the team, you certainly would expect, at some point here. And we know what JT Miller is capable of when he's not in a tough situation physically and maybe mentally earlier this season as well. Elias Pettersson, 2 more points last night. I don't think he's at peak Pettersson quite yet, but he's certainly a lot better than he was earlier in this season and in the playoffs. If that continues on a positive trajectory, well, that's a big difference maker too. All of a sudden, you've got a true superstar back at the top of your lineup. And let's not act like everything has gone wrong for the Canucks this year either, right? Kiefer Sherwood, $1.5 million, are you kidding, for what he's brought to the team? Jake DeBrusque scores another goal. 3 goals in a couple games there to start the road trip. Maybe he's starting to turn it around. I'm making the positive scenario here, but my point is, it's not as if the Canucks have had the Nashville Predators start to the season, where they need to get super, super hot just to make the playoffs, just to have a hope of sneaking in as a wild card team. They're third in their division in points percentage. Who looks like true world beaters in the Western Conference right now? Yeah, Vegas, that would scare you. I'm not saying the Canucks will be favored over them or anything. But if this team survives without Philip Roenick until JT Miller gets back, is able to string together some good performances, what they need to do is convince the front office to be aggressive. And if that happens, we know how aggressive this front office can be. We know that they're willing to go out and make the moves required to make this team a true Stanley Cup contender. The team has to check some boxes first, of course, and I'm not saying they're easy. I'm not saying they're not going to be challenging. They are, absolutely. But if you're ready to write off this season as, well, last year was amazing and this one's a write-off, it's done, it's over, it's way too early for that. Way, way too early. There's still enough that can go right. There's enough upside baked into this team. There are enough chances to improve as the season continues for them to make noise, for them to do something, for them to establish themselves still as Stanley Cup contenders. It's tough right now. It looks dark right now. I will give that to you. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not write this season off just yet. This one, really working hard to sell the team, eh? Any idiot can see that the fifth best defense in the league last year isn't close to what was put on the ice this year. But we know they're capable of doing that. We know they're capable of doing that with very similar personnel. Yeah, they're missing Nikita Zadorov, okay? But you're telling me he was the key? He was the singular key? So the blue line playing like it did last year? I don't buy that. We know Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers are capable of more. So I think, again, it is completely unfair and unreasonable to say, well, that defensive performance is never coming back. That last year was a one-off. They lost it. They had their fastball defensively, and it's never coming back. I'm not guaranteeing anything. I'm not saying it's definitely going to be there, that they're going to turn back into one of the best defensive teams in the league, but you're ready to write that off? You're ready to say there's no chance? Way too early for that. And if that happens, then yeah, they're going to be right there in the playoffs, and you know, maybe having a chance to do more than that as well. Keith the Water Guy says, the most Canuck thing ever is the fans overreacting about last year after everybody had career years, not realizing that this season is exactly what everybody expected last season. Well, the only thing I disagree with that is, going into last year, there was so much trepidation about what this team's floor was. Yes, what their ceiling was, but also what their floor was. Because you think about the last Travis Green year and the Bruce Boudreau year, we saw what the floor, how low the floor was for the team. And it was ugly. It was not good. Right? And so I think there was still a lot of concern about how bad things could get. And I think last year, it didn't so much answer the questions about the floor necessarily, maybe later in the year. But the one difference this year is we're seeing that the floor is really high for the team, right? So I don't think this is, when people say like, oh, this is what we were expecting of the team last year, I disagree. I think people are expecting things to be truly disastrous and go off the rails. But again, this team has dealt with a lot of really, really tough problems, tough challenges already, and they're still in a playoff spot. That wasn't the expectation about this team. The expectation about this team was, if things go really, really wrong, the bottom's going to fall out. And they're going to be a lottery team. They're going to be maybe in contention for a top 10 or top 5 pick type of team if things go this wrong for them. So at the very least, you can say they've proven that their floor is a lot higher than we thought going into last year, certainly. Now the question, of course, and the challenge for them will be to show that their ceiling is higher than it was even last year. And somebody, you know, I made the reference earlier in the show to they got to find that next gear. They got to find that higher gear. Somebody said it's hard to find a higher gear when you're missing half of your Pistons. That's the biggest challenge, right? Because your ceiling is always going to be dependent in large part on what your best players are doing. And if you're missing multiple of your best players, and right now it's JT Miller and it's Filip Hronek and Thatcher Demko, but at different points it's been Brock Besser as well. If you're missing multiple of your really core foundational pieces, it's going to be so hard to have that ceiling. So a lot of this is going to depend on what Thatcher Demko does. Right? What JT Miller does when he gets back. What Filip Hronek looks like when he eventually returns to the lineup. And we don't know those answers yet. So yes, concerning, lots of reasons to be worried, lots of red flags about this team. But it's not over yet. It's American Thanksgiving. They are in a playoff spot. And we don't know what's going to happen here. That's all I'm saying. Somebody says, so you're saying there's a chance? Absolutely there's a chance. There is absolutely a chance here. I'm not going to put a number on it. I don't know. There's a chance things could get really bad, too. There's always a chance things could get worse. Never forget that. Things can always get worse, but things could also get a lot better from here on out as well. Mike from Surrey texts in, OMG, everyone settle down. If Demko even just played the Seelov starts, we would have at least three or four more points, be close to our leading division despite the injuries. That's not a bad point. That is not a bad point from Mike from Surrey. I think we maybe are underestimating a little bit what Thatcher Demko could do for this team, right? What a goaltending tandem of Kevin Lankinen and Thatcher Demko could do for this team. Yes, again, the uncertainty, I want to acknowledge that. But Thatcher Demko is an incredible goalie, right? And he obviously, at his peak level, would make a huge, huge difference. Lotso says, 500 hockey to January 1st. Completely possible. I haven't done the numbers, crunched the numbers here to see exactly what that would do to their standing. But yeah, you go 500 for a month here in these circumstances, you reset in the new year and you see what you can do from there. Again, I'm not guaranteeing anything. No one get on me for being house radio here. I'm just saying don't write off this season just yet. Okay, to finish up the show here, there's so much going on. We're forcing him to do even more work than he already does for the station, which I do feel bad about, but we needed someone to help me weigh in here. And from Canuck Central, and of course on the pre- and post-game show as well, he is our guy, Satyar Shah. Sat, what's going on, man?
What's going on, man? Listen, if you don't want to do house radio, I will. So whatever house radio take you want, I got you covered.
Right. But you know what I'm saying. I don't know how much of you heard there, right? But, like, we're getting a lot. And look, I get it. I get the doom and gloom. So many things have gone wrong. And then you just take another, another key player out of the lineup with injury. We don't know the details on Hronek yet. Like, I understand where it's coming from. But as I was saying, you know, this team is still third in the division in points percentage, right? If they are able to prevent the bottom from falling out, get healthy at some point, like, if you thought this team had Stanley Cup upside coming into the season, I'm not sure anything that's happened should have really swayed you from that point just yet, depending on what they look like when they get healthy.
Well, and that's the thing, right? And there's still, 61 games remaining on the schedule. Yep. You're right. They're not chasing the standings. It's not the best position to be in, but they're not in a bad position, right? And I agree. Like, I think what we've seen so far does not indicate a high ceiling, but we haven't seen them healthy or even at their best. So I think we're in a holding pattern. I've been saying that a lot this year so far, but that's kind of where we're at with the injuries they've had. Now the extra problems coming along. If they can stay in the race and improve by the end of the season, I think that is the goal. And there's not much you can do. I know fans are frustrated, and I know people want answers, and they want to know right away, is this team good or are they bad? We just need more time to figure that out. But the good news is they're not out of the playoff race.
Yeah, again, I guess that's a good way of putting it, right, is I'm not saying, oh, this team is a Stanley Cup contender. Of course you can't say that. But if you're writing off the possibility, we don't know what's going to happen here in terms of trades, in terms of everything, health, all of that. It's too early to write off the possibility. And, you know, that idea of being in a holding pattern that you bring up, I think that's a really good way of looking at it, right? And I know even, you know, Dranter and I have been talking this week about, does the management group maybe want to see a little bit more in terms of identity and habits like last year before they're willing to really commit future assets to trading to improve this team? What do you think their reaction will be to the Filip Hronek trade, right? Because last year, Carson Soucy goes down to go out and get Nikita Zadorov. Obviously, Hronek, better player, harder to replace. It's not quite so simple, but do you think this spurs them to do something in the short term with Filip Hronek out of the lineup?
So I don't think that they're going to do something they weren't comfortable doing yesterday because of the injury, but we know this front office is constantly active. And one thing, I mean, I did check in on this today, too, and didn't get any real updates on, they don't want to really tell you what's going on with Hronek, but obviously admit that it's going to be a little bit of a while. I know Dhaliwal mentioned that it could be a shoulder separation for him. I can't confirm the injury, but one thing I have heard is that, Irf mentioned, don't expect surgery for the time being, which means he's probably not out for the season. Mm-hmm. So at some point he's returning. So you can't just seem to bank on the LTIR all year for him right now. Yeah. So I think the Canucks are kind of in a spot where they want to make improvements, but their cap situation hasn't changed in a way that they can take on salary without sending money back out. So that kind of brings us back to they want to improve, but I do think they're kind of stuck for the moment until they get guys back and accrue some more cap space.
And how dicey could it get here? Like, because as you say, it's not as if they can just put – they probably can't just put Filip Hronek and do the Mark Stone thing, right, where it's like, okay, we'll see you in the playoffs, and then you'll be healthy, and then we'll be able to exceed the cap. So if you put him on LTI to facilitate a trade at some point, I mean, one, you remove your ability to toll daily cap space, right, and that hurts you. But then also you got to fit everyone on the cap at a certain point when everyone's healthy too. So, you know, I expect they're going to try really hard to avoid that. But as these absences and these injuries kind of crop up, like, could they get to a point where they have to consider an LTIR solution for Hronek at some point?
So I think what's going to happen is unless something comes along right now where they're like, hey, we have to make this deal. And they've always, every time I ask about, you know, where are you at with trades? And I hear that, hey, there's not much going on, but they always allow the possibility that if something comes along that we like, we won't wait to do it. But that just hasn't kind of come together yet. Mm-hmm. I think even on Hronek, they have, again, it's a holding pattern until you really know how long he's out. Because if you get to a point, let's say in a couple of months, and it hasn't improved the way you had hoped, or you look at it and you say, well, if he's not going to come back until the last week of the season, are you not just better off LTIRing him until the playoffs? I think, and then maybe that changes what they do with accruals, because that way you can bank up to almost $8 million or $7.25 million on his salary, which is pretty close to what they would get by accruing cap space up until the trade deadline with what they have left. So if that becomes a possibility, it could allow them to do something sooner. But the other thing I heard today is teams want so much for these defensemen, and now that the Canucks have Hronek out, the first thing they're going to hear is, well, you guys have an injury, so how much more are you willing to pay to make this deal today? So I also don't think they want to be in a spot where they have to overpay for somebody today.
Yeah, that's why I think, like, they're not going to, you know, quote-unquote solve their blue line and do, like, their deadline shopping now as a result. But if there was, you know, player X that was available for a fourth-round pick, just, like, even to give them, or, you know, a fourth and a third, like the Zadorov deal last year, right, where it's like, okay, this isn't the big needle-moving acquisition we want to make necessarily, but it's a guy who's available and help fills a role for us. And it might not – it's probably not going to be as, you know, as effective as the Zadorov one turned out last year, but, like, that type of move seems a lot more plausible to me than, you know, oh, okay, we're going to go pay full market price for one of the top defensemen on the market.
For sure. The only issue is there isn't a Zadorov guy around. The only guy that was close was, as far as tenuous situation that needed to be resolved, was a Liljegren one, and he has another $3 million on next year's cap. Now, if they knew what they know now, would they have a player to try to get Liljegren a bit cheaper? Perhaps, right? But the thing is, even on Marcus Pettersson, who, you know, we've heard they have interest in, the ask from Pittsburgh right now is close to a first-round pick. There's no way the Canucks are trading a first-round pick today for Marcus Pettersson to be a free agent at the end of the season. And is he a significant upgrade on Soucy? I'm not even sure that's the case, right? So when your options right now are kind of limited, you have to overpay for a guy like Pettersson. You kind of stuck. That's why you hear you're out there. And I know Frank Cervalli mentioned with us, and even helped Brooks, Vancouver, and the main reason why aren't willing to trade Vilander for Yurchek right now. When that kind of tells you that they're trading Vilander, they're only doing it for the right piece, and it would have to be a major significant addition. And right now, which top four defenseman is truly available that you would be willing to trade Yurchek for? Because, like, you can talk about Rasmus Anderson, that was not trading him right now.
Yeah. Okay, Seth, the connection's dropping out a little bit here, and we're almost out of time anyway. So thank you for tagging in, buddy. I appreciate giving us the update on some of what you're hearing in the wake of the Filip Hronek trade. And, of course, you can hear more from Sat on that on Canucks Central today with Dan Riccio. And you know, no surprise there, but, like, because there's a big difference between being aggressive and panicking. Right. And, you know, Sat, as he says, this management group is all of a sudden not going to go and, you know, call a team that they were in conversations with last week but couldn't make a deal with and say, OK, well, we're going to give you whatever you want just because we want to make this deal right now because of Filip Hronek's injury. Right. That's not going to be how they operate. But I do think he made a good point. You know, you look at the Timothy Liljegren deal that went down earlier. Right. Which is, you know, guy with some salary who ends up going for a pretty cheap price. If something like that becomes available, where it's not a glamorous name, it's not still a highly touted prospect like Yiracek is, right? It's not a clear-cut top four guy, but it's just another option who gives you something a little different than the options you have healthy on your right side right now. Those are the types of deals. You know, I've even seen people suggest, like, hey, Ethan Bear in the Washington organization, is a reunion possible there? Who knows? But it's those types of players, I think, that become a lot more plausible in the near term. And by the way, I mean, Ethan Bear's been playing in the AHL. So there, you would think that there might be a deal available of some sort there. I don't know how interested either party is in a reunion, but like I think that's the kind of thing we're talking about, is not the big splashy Rasmus Anderson deal, probably not the big splashy David Yiracek deal, but a guy who can help, a guy who gives you a bit of a different look. Nobody that's available out there is going to come in and replace fully what Filip Hronek is going to do, right? It's going to have to be by committee. Quinn Hughes is going to have to carry even more of a burden now for this team. Elias Pettersson is going to have to keep improving and getting closer to his peak. Everyone is going to have to play better in his absence. If they can find just another D-man who helps a little bit, I get it. I get the concern about the short-term assets, giving them up for this or giving up assets for short-term fixes, for rentals, all of those things. But if you help your team survive, look, this division is winnable. You are in a position where you can still do some damage this season. If there's a deal out there that helps you do that, that helps you helps make that more reliable, then you got to consider it. Somebody texts in, Will Borgen. Well, Seattle's playing pretty well. I don't know if Seattle's ready to start dealing UFAs, or at least they've been winning games more often recently. But, yeah, Will Borgen, always interesting. All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you to everyone for texting in. Really appreciate all the comments today on a solo show for me, and especially the memories of the 94 Stanley Cup run. Always fun to go for kind of a trip down memory lane with those ones. Actually, there was one other one that came in. I lost the texter who sent it in, but basically he said a barber came to his elementary school and gave everyone a free shave of the Canucks logo in their on the side of their head, which is just fantastic. That's what we're talking about here. So shout out to whoever sent that one in. Thanks to everyone else for texting in. We are off tomorrow. Enjoy instead in this time slot, not just Canucks talk, actually Canucks hockey when they're playing the Buffalo Sabres on the station tomorrow. And we will be back on Monday for more Canucks talk. Sportsnet 650.